situation wherein you find your ideas are always just quickly brushed aside, and you're assigned the most menial of tasks, despite having valuable skills and more years on the job than others on your team. You want to bring up your concern with your team manager, but you're afraid that confronting her about it will only make you look conceited, or will lead her to think you're questioning her delegation skills, and thus cause her to be angry at you. These fears about ruining your image and your relationship with your manager thus paralyze you from speaking up altogether and block any chance of improving your own job satisfaction and career growth. One tricky thing about avoiding confrontation is that it doesn't necessarily mean you have no desire to confront anyone about your situation. A mismatch between what's demanded or expected of you and what you actually want to do often creates a desire for confrontation within you. However, because you're afraid of the possible consequences of acting on that desire to confront, you end up holding off on confrontation. This often results in that desire for confrontation leaking out in other, usually ugly and damaging ways. Instead of being expressed directly, it brims over through indirect means in the form of passive-aggressive behaviors. Passive-aggressive behaviors represent indirect, often unconscious expressions of hostility. You may not have directly said no to a colleague who's requested that you file a report on her behalf, but you conveniently forget to do that task as a way to indirectly express your resentment at having been asked to do so. Or you may assure your spouse that you're not at all mad that he didn't call you once during his work trip. But you retaliate by acting cold and forgetting to update him about your whereabouts all week. So, while you have managed to stave off direct confrontation in an attempt to preserve goodwill in that relationship, your actions still end up backfiring by leaving you prone to passive-aggressive behaviors that undermine the relationship anyhow. Thus, avoiding confrontation for fear that it might only make things worse, ironically results in the very outcome it's meant to deflect. The absence of confrontations doesn't mean your relationship is all healthy, and the presence of confrontations doesn't mean your relationship has gone to the dogs. In fact, the ability to rise above your fear of confrontations so that you can handle conflict situations better is necessary to maintain healthy relationships. No matter how compliant and adaptable you believe you are, you're bound to run into conflict at one point or another, simply by virtue of you being an individual with your own set of thoughts, feelings, needs, and values that may very well differ from that of others. If you were to keep your relationship with others and yourself healthy, you'll thus need to have the ability to tolerate being in the face of conflict and get past your fear of confrontation. People-pleasing can be a hard habit to kick, especially because it's not a blatantly nasty tendency to have. In fact, it often helps you appear supremely likable and noble and occasionally rewards you with feelings of contentment when people repay you by smiling and saying thank you for every favor you grant and every transgression you let slide. But when you look deeper into the causes and origins of why you're really bending over backwards to please people, you will recognize just how nasty people-pleasing is. Maybe not with respect to others, but with respect to your own self. Sticking to people-pleasing is a sure sign that you continue to cultivate within you an intense need to serve others, insecurities and feelings of worthlessness, mistaken assumptions about what being a good person entails, or a restrictive fear of confrontation. It's time to ask yourself whether you'd really want to keep living your life this way, chained to the destructive habit of being at everyone's beck and call 24/7. If your answer is no, then it's time to pull yourself up by your bootstraps. By understanding the causes of people-pleasing, you've already taken the first step to breaking free of its chains. Now it's time to take the next step forward by learning the ways you can stand up for yourself, say no, refuse others, and overall just stop the people-pleasing mania you've let run your life for one day too many. In other words, it's time to learn how you can get better at treating yourself better. Takeaways. There are many causes of people-pleasing behavior, and they start with the beliefs we hold about ourselves in relation to others. Simply put, we are not the same. We are lower or inferior in some way. This sets up interpersonal dynamics that enable people-pleasing and, in fact, reward it. I've divided it into four main categories that cause these beliefs. First is a skewed definition of relationships and how serving others should be your first priority to the detriment of yourself. If you possess this belief, you will be racked with guilt if you attempt to act against it. Second is a sense of low self-worth. If you don't feel that you are equal to others or that others will accept you for you, then it becomes clear that your only chance of acceptance is to bend over backward and serve people's whims. Third, we have been taught from infancy that generosity and kindness are admirable traits. Some of us take this too far and equate prioritizing oneself to be selfish and negative. Finally, many people-pleasers simply fear confrontation. They hate the tension and discomfort and will go to extreme lengths to avoid it. They don't want to make waves and are solely focused on flying under the radar. Chapter 3. Reprogram Your Beliefs. The previous chapter discussed the beliefs that underlie people-pleasing behaviors. The belief that you live to please and serve others, that you're unworthy of love as you are, that asserting yourself means you're a bad person, and that confrontation should be avoided at all costs. Clearly, people-pleasing arises from such distorted views of the world and of yourself. Instead of feeling like a whole person, enough and worthy as you are, you've allowed yourself to believe you're essentially lacking. You've come to need other people's approval to fill the gaping hole that a healthy self-esteem and self-love would have filled. Your skewed views and beliefs have thus negatively impacted the way you relate to others and to yourself. Ridding yourself of the compulsive need to please people would thus require you to radically shift how you view the world and, more importantly, how you view yourself. This chapter is all about giving you the tools to do just that. Change your behavior by reprogramming your core beliefs and perspectives, especially those that directly impact your tendency to please others first and place yourself last. Changing your beliefs, general principles. Changing your beliefs is no walk in the park. Beliefs, especially those related to people-pleasing behaviors, are often intertwined so intricately with your personal history, critical experiences, and general temperament that they tend to be melded with who you are. In a sense, you behave according to what you think according to what you've experienced, and you become what you believe. And because it's so hard to separate who you are from what you believe, a task like changing the entire floor of your house might in fact be way easier than changing your beliefs. Hard labor is relatively easy to do because it's external to you, more concrete and more controllable, and thus also requires less willpower and discipline on your part. But changing your beliefs? That poses a more difficult challenge. Trying to change what you think about the world and about yourself requires you to deal with something internal, abstract and fluid, not to mention needing a high level of self-awareness and enormous amount of focus and devotion. But though changing your beliefs is a difficult task, it is by no means impossible. You can learn the best practices to carry it out, and with enough dedication and consistency, you'll be able to reprogram your beliefs to create a better version of you. One of the most trusted and proven ways to change your beliefs is by using the principles of cognitive behavioral therapy, CBT. This method posits that you can change the way you behave by changing the way you think. Basically, through CBT, you learn to be more aware of the kinds of thoughts you have, hone your ability to differentiate between distorted and realistic thoughts, and work to replace your distorted thoughts with realistic ones. The Blue Model is a specific CBT strategy developed by PracticeWise to help counter negative thinking. Blue is an acronym that stands for the kind of extremely negative thoughts that you should recognize in yourself when they do pop up in your head. B stands for blaming myself. L is looking for bad news. U means unhappy guessing. And E represents exaggeratedly negative thoughts. Below is an explanation of each of these thoughts and how they manifest themselves in people pleasers in particular. Blaming myself. There is a difference between being accountable for your own actions and wallowing in excessive self-blame. This point is all about detecting when you've fallen into the trap of the latter. Extreme self-blaming begins to breed in your mind when you start thinking, "It's all my fault," or "I've absolutely messed everything up." While taking responsibility is a mature and commendable act, unduly blaming yourself for every bad thing that happens is simply counterproductive and has even been linked to mental health problems such as depression. In the context of people-pleasing, you're likely to have thoughts of excessive self-blame after a half-hearted attempt at putting yourself first. When you refuse your sister's request to babysit for her, you may start to feel guilty when she talks about how much trouble it will be for her to find a babysitter. You think that it's definitely your fault she would have to go through all of that trouble if you decline. So you oblige, because you feel the weight of blame for things not going as smoothly if you did otherwise. Looking for bad news. It's a common tendency to focus on the negative rather than the positive. If you've just been given 9 compliments and 1 negative comment about your presentation at work, chances are you'll be dwelling on that single criticism and beating yourself up for it. Be wary of thoughts that look for the bad news in every situation, because such thoughts are sure to distort your outlook for the worse. In people-pleasing, such thoughts may manifest as a focus on the negative consequences of standing up for yourself. When you refuse a friend's party invitation, your mind zeroes in on the thought that refusing might cause your friend to harbor ill feelings toward you. You de-emphasize all the positives of that refusal, such as getting your work done and getting to rest, because your mind has latched on to that single negative consequence of upsetting your friend. And so you end up prioritizing what your friend wants instead of putting yourself first in that situation. Unhappy guessing. This points to the thought that things are going to turn out bad in the future. Even though there's no way you can know what will happen, you predict the worst outcomes. The anxiety and panic that such a thought then rouses can rattle you enough to turn your prediction into a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you have an all-important test to ace, but you keep telling yourself it's going to be a disaster and fret about it so much that you can no longer think straight, then you're playing right into disaster's hands. Exaggeratedly negative. There are thoughts that completely color everything black, and you should be on the lookout for those. They may sound something like, "Everything about this trip sucks," or "Nothing ever goes right in my life." Exaggeratedly negative thoughts suck out all hope and bring only regret and fear, making it all that much harder for you to start moving toward more productive ends. If you're a chronic people pleaser, you may tend to have exaggeratedly negative thoughts about yourself. You think that nothing about you is likable, so you push yourself to serve and please others in an attempt to make them like you. Take, for instance, Kylie, who's grown up believing, "I'm good for nothing and no one will ever love me as I am." Given that, she always spreads herself too thin just to please others and gain from them the love and acceptance she's never given herself. She thinks that refusing others will only prove to them just how useless and unworthy of love she truly is. Thus, she lives her life aiming only to please everyone else around her. Recognizing when blue thoughts occur in your mind is only the first step toward changing them. The next step is to replace those blue thoughts with true thoughts. While blue thoughts are biased toward negativity and catastrophe, true thoughts are more positive and realistic. True thoughts help you have a fairer perspective and guide you toward taking positive actions instead of just wallowing in self-pity and defeat. Say you have a blue thought that goes, "If I skip this PTA meeting so I could have my migraine checked first, it means I'm a bad parent." First, you need to recognize that such a thought is exaggeratedly negative and needs to be replaced with a more realistic true thought, To think up a true thought, Amy Morn suggests asking what you would say to a friend who presented you with such a dilemma. Would you tell your friend that missing the meeting would mean they are a bad parent? Probably not. Instead, you would probably tell them, "It's better to have your migraine checked first, because you can't be a good parent if you end up becoming too sick to care for your family. Missing one meeting wouldn't mean you're a bad parent. Besides, you wouldn't be able to be fully present at that meeting with a migraine anyway." Now, think those thoughts for yourself, as you wish your friend would for themselves. Practicing that will steer you away from self-destructive people-pleasing behaviors and toward a healthier relationship with yourself and others. Changing blue thoughts into true thoughts is a core process in reprogramming the beliefs that underlie people-pleasing. As discussed in the previous chapter, there are four primary beliefs. 1. The belief that you live only to please and serve others. 2. The belief that you're unworthy of love as you are. 3. The belief that asserting yourself means you're a bad person. And 4. The belief that it's always better to just go along with others. This chapter will elaborate on the true thoughts that should replace those distorted beliefs. On the belief that you need to please and serve others. Blue thoughts. B. I deserve to be blamed if I fail to put others first. L. Not helping them now will negate all other times I did agree to help. U. If I refuse them, they will definitely hate me, and it will ruin our relationship for good. And E. Being selfish will ruin everything. True thought. It's okay and sometimes necessary to be selfish. Being selfish is always bad. Such a notion, often drilled into our thinking since childhood, is one of the cornerstones that led to a lifetime of people-pleasing behaviors. When, as an obedient child, you're taught that putting yourself first is tantamount to being a bad person, you develop a pattern of thinking that compels you to always put others first instead. Something as easy as a playdate may have planted such seeds of thought in you early on. That tug of war for your favorite toy with another kid may have ended with your mother telling you to let it go and learn how to share, because that's what good children do. Doing as you were told, you were then praised for being kind. Discovering such rewards for putting others first, you thus keep on with people-pleasing in order to gain approval and love. On the other side of this coin is what happens when you go against the fundamental lesson and instead decide to prioritize yourself. As a child, you may have tested such boundaries when you refused to give up your favorite toy for someone else. While adamant to assert yourself, you may have been guilted into giving it up anyway by a number of techniques. Being told how sad you're making the other kid feel, or being labeled a bad child among others. From this, you learn that putting yourself first should rightly make you feel guilty. Eventually, as an adult, you feel that something's not quite right about putting yourself first, even when it comes to such things as prioritizing your health. So what started out as an innocent maxim, "don't be selfish," often becomes your undoing as it evolves into the self-destructive philosophy that putting yourself first makes you a bad person. Feeling guilty or prioritizing yourself, along with gaining approval for putting others first, becomes the fuel for the people-pleasing habits you find so hard to break. To break free from your people-pleasing patterns, therefore, you'll need to reframe the way you think about being selfish. Being selfish here simply means focusing on yourself and putting yourself first, not necessarily at the expense of anyone else. It's about being attuned to your own needs and wants and valuing yourself enough to honor them instead of being quick to wave them aside in the name of pleasing others. Being selfish isn't always bad. In fact, it's necessary to be selfish every so often for the following reasons. You can't fully serve others if you're not 100% yourself. It's all right to want to serve others and to nurture the relationships in your life by being there for people when they need you. But in everything, moderation is key. Yes, even when it comes to something as noble as service and dependability. There is a point at which putting others first becomes harmful, not just for you, but for everyone involved. See, what many people-pleasers fail to see is that sacrificing so much of themselves in pursuit of serving everyone around them is sabotaging their very capacity to continue being there for others when it truly matters. When you're constantly exhausted and frazzled, lacking sleep and overloaded with stress from taking care of everyone else, sooner or later you'll get sick, demotivated, or simply indifferent about work, friends, and family. Not taking the time to sleep, eat, and rest enough is bound to take a toll on you, eventually robbing you of your capacity to serve others with genuine concern and pleasure. In an odd conundrum, being too selfless makes you unable to effectively serve those you want to please. For example, Sandra is a tireless mother and a dedicated business executive. Wanting to be a selfless family woman and at the same time a career woman, she sacrifices sleep, often skips meals, and forgoes exercise and recreation so she could have more time catering to the needs of everyone in her family and workplace. Over the years, she's developed severe stress ulcers from her unhealthy lifestyle patterns and finds herself confined to a hospital bed for a surgery and required bed rest. In her zeal to serve everyone else around her, she eventually finds herself unfit to do much for anyone at all. The interesting paradox is that in order to truly put others first and give yourself in meaningful ways, you have to know how to put yourself first and be a little selfish where it counts. By making time for yourself and taking care of your own health first, you are putting yourself in the best position to continue being there for the people around you when they most need it. So by being selfish, you claw your sense of self back slowly, and you can use this newfound energy to be better at whatever you choose to spend it on. Hopefully you choose yourself, but even if you want to choose others, you'll be better off if you are operating at 100%. You're the only one responsible for your own self. Being selfish is necessary because when it comes down to it, you're the only one who can truly take care of you. Others may be able to remind you to eat well or even serve you food or urge you to exercise or take you to the doctor when you're not feeling well. But these are all external actions. It's only you who can consume that healthy plate of food for your body, gather up the self-discipline to consistently exercise, and pick up on your bodily signals that say when you need to go see a doctor. If you keep disregarding all these just so you can cater to everyone else, then you're putting your very survival at risk. Remember, no one else will be able to do those things for you. Moreover, no one will care like you because they simply aren't you and affected in a tangible way. We'd like to think that our parents or siblings will come through for us when we need it, and they might. But they still won't be able to devote all of their time and effort to you. Only you can do those for yourself, so you have to do them without feeling guilty about it. People-pleasing has to take a back seat to self-preservation. In the end, self-preservation is our underlying goal, but it's easy to forget that on a day-to-day basis. Being selfish does not equate to being irresponsible or disregarding everyone else. Just because you set aside housework for half a day over the weekend for some rest doesn't mean you're a lazy person. Just because you missed your friend's party doesn't mean you turned your back on them forever. There is a difference between limiting the time you spend for others so you could take care of yourself and being an uncaring, insensitive person. Give yourself permission to refuse others and miss a few social commitments here and there, if that's what you need to recharge your personal batteries. The world doesn't operate in black and white, and you consequently can't view selfishness as 100% negative. It's far from it. The typical stigma involved with the term selfish makes it appear to be a harmful act, and thus we are usually conditioned to avoid it. There is a wrong way to be selfish, one that involves being driven by egotism and looking only to use others for personal gain. Such selfishness is indeed destructive rather than helpful, But it's rather the exception to the rule and not at all what we're talking about here. We just want to take care of ourselves, put ourselves first as appropriate, and protect ourselves without necessarily inflicting harm on others. All we are encouraging here is to prioritize your needs occasionally, and certainly ahead of the mere desires of others. This kind of selfishness is what will help save you from the destructive pattern of people-pleasing you have let yourself suffer. In addition to the above points on how to reframe your thoughts about selfishness, there are two main ways to proactively be selfish, in the good way. Prioritize your body. Being a people-pleaser takes its toll on your health. If you juggle multiple responsibilities at home and work and try to keep up with everyone's demands on you, you're bound to lose sleep, not have enough time or energy for exercise, and rely on food options served up fast but greasy and definitely unhealthy. Keeping with this pattern is guaranteed to make you more vulnerable to catching diseases from the common cold to serious heart disease. This is the way being a relentless people-pleaser can literally kill you. So, before you contract any irreversible damage on your body, you owe it to yourself to put your own health first. In fact, make that part of your new filter when you come to the crossroads of asking whether to prioritize yourself or others. Is this going to harm or be detrimental to your body in some way? Is it going to cause you to neglect it and overall become less healthy? If so, that should be a hard pass from you. It's a useful metric that will definitely prevent you from bending over backward for people if it would, for instance, interfere with your gym routine or sleep schedule. Learn how to say no to demand so that you can make time for yourself to prepare and consume healthful meals, get enough sleep and rest, and engage in regular exercise. Block out time in your daily schedule for such essential self-care activities, and protect those time blocks from being impinged on by extraneous social demands. These blocks of time belong to you, and no one else. Get comfortable with telling people you can't take on a task or go to that gathering because you need to be at the gym or go food shopping or simply rest. It's necessary to be selfish in this way, because when your physical health is on the line, everything else hangs in the balance. Prioritize your mind. With modern life presenting its own set of stresses at just about every turn, the meaning of self-care has evolved to place more and more emphasis on caring not just for your bodily fitness, but for your mental health as well. This is your other filter for evaluating whether or not you should do something. Does it put your mental well-being in a state of unhappiness, tension, or discomfort? Say your friend is throwing a big party over the weekend and wants you to come. Knowing your friend, you're well aware that the party is bound to be rowdy, loud, and crowded, none of which you enjoy. Realizing you're not likely to have a good time there anyway, the best thing to do for your own mental health is to politely but firmly decline the invitation. You need to see that rejecting the invite is not the same as rejecting your friend, and that prioritizing your own peace of mind by just settling into a restful weekend is totally okay. People pleasers in particular are vulnerable to being in a constant state of psychological torment. They are often plagued by insecurities, feelings of worthlessness, excessive anxiety, and guilt when refusing others, unrealistic expectations on themselves, and distorted notions about what being a good person entails. On top of all of that, they may feel guilty about the very idea of taking care of themselves, whether physically or mentally. Save for the last part about guilt, if serving someone else brings up those negative emotions in you, it should be a pass from you. Learn how to be your own best friend and respect your own needs and wants. Train your mind to pick up on self-defeating and damaging thoughts, telling you that you're not worthy of love and acceptance unless you do exactly what others want. Then avoid those actions, people, and impulses. The people who truly love and accept you will do so unconditionally. They will not reject you or withdraw their affection just because you refuse their request or assert yourself. Most importantly, stop feeling ashamed and guilty about putting yourself first. Being selfish enough to take good care of both your mind and body is an essential life skill to master. On the other hand, people-pleasing is a toxic, damaging habit to have. Which of the two you nurture in yourself is up to you. On the belief that you're unworthy of love and acceptance. Blue thoughts. B. I'm never enough, and it's all my fault that no one likes me. L. It doesn't matter that I have some positive qualities. My moodiness is enough to drive people away. U. No one will ever love and accept me unless I do what they want. And E. I'm the worst person anyone can be with. True thought. I'm worthy of love and acceptance just as I am. Feeling insecure and unworthy of love is yet another driving force behind people-pleasing behaviors. When you feel inherently lacking, you try to fill that vacancy with approval gained from others. You always put others first because you feel that's the only way to gain worth, esteem, and love from the people around you. You believe you're only worth something for so long as you are of use to others, and that if you cease to please them, you lose value as a person. So how do you reprogram such skewed beliefs? The key is to see yourself in a new light. You need to be able to realize your inherent worth as a person, recognize your strengths, and know that you don't need to be perfect for you to be worthy. In so doing, you'll be able to accept and love yourself first, instead of depending on others to do it for you. By building more confidence and focusing on your own priorities, you'll become approval independent and stop using people-pleasing behaviors to feel loved and worthy. The journey toward accepting yourself just as you are is especially challenging. To help you through it, learn to apply the following principles of accepting yourself, as suggested by Paul Dalton. You live the feeling of your thinking. How you experience the world, as well as how you feel about yourself, depends on what you think. If you think that the world will accept you only if you put others first, then you will see nothing but evidence of that. If you think that the only way you'll be happy is if others approve of you, then you'll feel the need to seek out others' approval and feel unhappy if they disapprove of you. Take, for instance, Sarah, who thinks the only way to be happy is to gain everyone's approval. Every time she puts others first, she receives so much appreciation and love from them, and that makes her so happy. If she fails to please others and gains disapproval instead, she feels unhappy. However, what makes Sarah unhappy isn't the fact that some people disapproved of her. Rather, it's her belief that she can never be happy unless everyone approves of her. Her mistaken belief that happiness comes from outside of her is what's truly messing it up for her. But while it's easier to spot the flaw in Sarah's thinking when presented that way, it's harder to notice such distorted beliefs in yourself. One way to help yourself spot such distortions is by asking yourself some hard questions about your beliefs and thoughts on relationships, happiness, and yourself. Ask yourself, what are the things I do to be happy? Or, what are the core beliefs I have about my worth as a person? Take it as an exercise of self-awareness and write your answers down in a journal so that you can clarify your thoughts better. Everything good is inside. In this modern age when social media has made it so much easier to flaunt status symbols and compare your life with others, it's very easy to believe that everything worth having is outside of you. Awards and recognition, financial success, material possessions. This line of thought feeds what Dalton calls the learned self, a version of you that relies on everything outside of you to feel worthy and acceptable. However, what the learned self actually does is separate you from who you truly are and from the other version of you called the unconditional self. The unconditional self is the authentic you, the innocent core untouched by all the criticism and trauma you may have been through. This self is the one that knows it's enough and worthy, even without all the trappings of external approval and material success. It is aware that everything good is inside and that true happiness can be found only within oneself. It's this unconditioned self that you need to revive so that you stop seeking others' approval in an attempt to feel worthy. One way to revive your unconditioned self is to take a break, unplug, and have some alone time. Go somewhere peaceful and relaxing where you can be free to reconnect with the deeper parts of who you are. Take this time to rediscover who you were before you allowed yourself to be pressured by society to turn into someone you're not just to please the world. Your relationship with yourself determines your relationship with everything else. Your relationship with yourself impacts everything else in your life. If you have a negative relationship with yourself, blaming, berating, and seeing the worst in yourself all the time, then you'll be desperate to seek from others the acceptance and love you crave but cannot give yourself. The danger of this is that you'll be vulnerable to abusive and toxic relationships with those who take advantage of your desperate need for approval. For example, if you think so low of yourself and believe you're unworthy of love, you may be more likely to tolerate even maltreatment from a partner. You may feel you deserve the verbal or emotional abuse you're enduring, because for so many years, you've treated yourself in the same harsh way as well. You'll simply want to continue pleasing even those who are already taking advantage of you, because that's how you derive a sense of worth and love. To get unstuck in that destructive pattern, start treating yourself with more compassion and kindness. Try to be a good friend to yourself. Instead of being the first to blame yourself for every mistake or disapproval from others, be gentle with yourself. Remember that you're allowed to mess up, that you're not responsible for others' happiness, and most importantly, that you're allowed to put yourself first. As you learn to forgive and love yourself first, you'll also start to feel less of a need to seek out approval and love from others. You'll realize that while pleasing others may feel good for a moment, loving yourself feels even better in a lasting way. Another exercise you can do to build your self-esteem is to make two lists, one of your strengths and one of your achievements. For example, in your list of strengths, you may include such attributes as creative, focused, good communicator, resilient, and honest. In your list of achievements, you might enumerate such things as awarded best project, successfully managed a team to achieve year-end goals, and organized an art exhibit for charity. Having such lists makes it clear to you the talent, skills, and positive qualities you do have, but often overlook as you struggle with your insecurities. If you're finding it difficult to come up with things to put on those lists, try to get the help of a supportive friend or relative. It's understandably difficult to identify your positive qualities if you feel unworthy in the first place, so having another pair of eyes to perceive your qualities more objectively would really help. Keep those lists accessible and read through them every morning to remind yourself of what you bring to the table, whether or not people approve of you. Finally, you might want to consider how your own expectations might be creating your insecurities and feelings of worthlessness. If you expect yourself to be the perfect parent, child, sibling, friend, neighbor, and colleague all rolled into one, never upsetting anybody or messing up any of those relationships, then you're setting yourself up for failure. You'll be bound to feel like you're never enough. Because the reality is that no single person can be everything to everyone. If you want to stop feeling unworthy and lacking, you'll need to readjust the standards you have set for yourself to make them more realistic. Make a list of the roles you play in life, for example, father, friend, colleague, and write the corresponding expectations you have for each. Replace perfectionistic with more realistic expectations about what you can and should do for others as you fulfill each role. That way, you'll get to feel a sense of satisfaction as you meet those expectations instead of spreading yourself too thin, trying to reach the impossible standards of pleasing everyone. On the belief that self-assertion is bad. Blue thoughts. B. I've wrecked everything by speaking up for myself. L. Being assertive is no good. It only brings unwanted tension in the group. U. If I stand up for myself, I'll ruin my relationships with others. And E. Asserting myself makes me a bad person. True thought. I can assert myself and still be a nice, good person at the same time. People-pleasing may also result from the belief that asserting yourself automatically makes you a bad person, the kind that aggressively imposes their needs and wants on others. Not wanting to be seen as that bad, aggressive person, you thus go along with what others want and never stand up for yourself. You believe that asserting yourself means having to be aggressive in imposing your own needs and wants on others, and you don't want to be that kind of person. Here's the problem with such thinking. The belief that the only alternative to being a people-pleasing doormat is to be an aggressive jerk is mistaken. You'll need to reprogram that belief by re-examining what being assertive really means. Assertiveness is about being able to speak your mind and stand up for yourself when the situation calls for it. It's about being self-assured and confident without being aggressive or arrogant. Being assertive doesn't make you a bad person. In fact, assertiveness is good. It's a necessary quality for you to nurture productive and satisfying relationships with others. It's important to realize that assertiveness is not aggressiveness. While aggressiveness is likely to worsen a situation by its use of unnecessary force, assertiveness can bring clarity and resolution to a tricky situation. For example, if you feel you've been given an unfair performance rating by your supervisor, making strong accusations about favoritism is aggressiveness. The assertive way of dealing with such a situation is by tactfully expressing your concern and asking your supervisor to review with you the basis of the rating you received. Done appropriately, assertiveness results not in the ruin of your relationships, but in their improvement. Understandably, assertiveness is not an easy thing to practice for people pleasers in particular. If you're a people pleaser, you're likely to be naturally caring and compassionate toward others, qualities that you may believe to be incompatible with being assertive. However, being assertive doesn't have to mean you stop being caring and kind. Through what Sherry M. Vavrichek calls compassionate assertiveness, you can stand up for yourself in a kind and caring manner. Here are some guidelines Sherry suggests on how to practice compassionate assertiveness. Be guided by the golden rule. Do unto others as you would want others to do unto you. So goes the maxim. When it comes to having compassion while being assertive, this rule should be your guide. If you asked someone to do you a favor and they actually don't want to do it, wouldn't you rather they expressed it'd be too much trouble rather than to do the favor while harboring resentment against you? You would probably prefer that they be direct with refusing you, but that they do so in a gentle and tactful manner. The same goes for when the situation is flipped. If doing someone a favor would be too much trouble for you, that someone would likely appreciate it more if you gently yet clearly expressed your refusal. They wouldn't want you doing that favor for them while gritting your teeth as you silently resent them. You may think you're protecting your relationships by trying to please them despite yourself, but by refusing to assert yourself, you're actually straining the relationship by allowing resentment and ill will to breed. The best thing you can do for yourself, the other person, and the relationship is therefore be assertive. Aim for a win-win situation. People pleasers are often tormented by a conflict between the needs and wants of others versus those of themselves. If you aim to please others, you tend to disregard your own needs and instead prioritize the needs of others, which eventually becomes a self-destructive pattern. To counter this, learn to assert yourself with the aim of arriving at a solution that respects the needs of both you and the other party. Acknowledge the valid concerns of the other person without disregarding your own needs. Better yet, offer suggestions that would help the other person out. For example, if a coworker asks if you would cover a shift for him, but you've already made other plans, you may respond with, "I understand you really need someone to cover your shift, but I'm afraid I'd be unavailable due to a prior commitment. Shall I check with Sam to see if he'd be up for it? Such a response is assertive, yet still helpful and supportive of a friend in need. So, as the above strategies have shown, you can be assertive while at the same time be a nice, compassionate, good person. You don't have to hold your tongue and do just what pleases others all the time for you to be considered a good person. Learn to think differently about what assertiveness means and how to practice it in daily life, and you'll soon start to replace people-pleasing patterns with self-assured actions that help you put yourself first when needed. On the belief that it's always better to just go along with others. Blue thoughts. B. I'm to blame if I can't find a way to be okay with what they want. L. The negative consequences of rocking the boat are too severe to risk doing it at all. U. Refusing or disagreeing with others will only spark conflict I cannot handle. And E. I have no choice but to please others because I'll never get over my fear of confrontation. True thought. I can learn to handle conflict and confront others in appropriate ways. One of the hallmarks of people-pleasing is the inability to say no to others, voice out your opinions and emotions, and assert what you want. If you want to please everyone around you, chances are you tend to simply go along with what others prefer and never stand up for yourself. Even if you aren't interested in pleasing people, you might be pushed into it indirectly through a crippling fear of confrontation. You're afraid to ruffle anybody's feathers, so you keep mum instead of speaking up. You don't want to rock the boat, so you comply with whatever demands or requests everybody else has for you. Fear of conflict and confrontation are strong motivators of people-pleasing behaviors. So, if you want to stop being the quintessential doormat, you'll need to learn how to overcome these fears. One way of overcoming your fears of conflict and confrontation is through a technique known as exposure therapy, and the use of what is known as fear hierarchy. What is exposure therapy? Exposure therapy is the process of deliberately placing yourself in situations that cause you fear and anxiety. You'll need to immerse yourself in your feared situations in a gradual and progressive manner, starting from situations that cause the least anxiety and later advancing to those that cause the most intense feelings of fear. This technique allows you to practice staying with those uncomfortable feelings of fear and anxiety until they no longer bother you as much, and you get to a point where you eventually overcome them. Exposure therapy is useful for helping people manage a wide variety of fears and phobias. For example, it's traditionally used to help people conquer phobias of certain animals, like snakes, dogs, spiders, or situations, like heights, elevators, crowded places. To people pleasers in particular, exposure therapy is focused on extinguishing the fear of confrontation that prevents them from refusing others and standing up for themselves. Though it's typically conducted by therapists, you may also utilize the principles of exposure therapy and practice it on your own to help you get past your fear of confrontation and consequently diminish your people-pleasing tendencies. To practice exposure therapy, you will have to immerse yourself in situations of conflict and confrontation. And since it's often difficult to come by such situations if you leave it to chance alone, you'll need to create those conflicts yourself. But before you start imagining that this technique will have you picking a fight with the first person you see on the streets, keep in mind that exposure training involves carefully selected, reasonable tasks paced gradually and in a progressive manner. For people deathly afraid of conflict, anything that involves assertion will help. This means that you're going to be working up a fear hierarchy, from mild conflict situations that trigger the least anxiety in you to more challenging confrontations that cause you the most fear. Creating your fear hierarchy. The fear hierarchy is an ordered list of situations that elicit your fears and anxieties. It's something that you construct that's made up of triggers and scenarios, particular to your own experience, and arranged in the way you deem fit. For example, your list may start with the least anxiety-eliciting task of taking a longer time than usual to do something, such as taking your time paying and counting your change at the sales counter before moving aside for the next customer. Though not a blatantly direct confrontation, it creates a mild conflict situation between you and the next customer or the cashier. Though unlikely to spark a prolonged verbal clash, this situation will challenge you to stay with the rising tension you feel from taking more time than is reasonable to do something. Eventually, you may work your way up to actually asserting yourself in a conflict situation, such as confronting a bully. This is bound to involve an actual verbal confrontation between you and another person, one who isn't likely to be the most forthcoming of people to confront. This will create an even higher level of tension and conflict for you to endure, and is intended to be something you should attempt toward the end of your exposures. Note that the fear hierarchy is intended to be a graduated list, starting with the easiest tasks and working up to the most difficult. It wouldn't be advisable or effective to start with taking a long time paying at the counter the first day, and the next day be confronting a bully. You'll need to work through a series of steps with advancing levels of difficulty so that you can get to gradually increasing your tolerance of the discomfort that comes from being in conflict situations. Below is a simple fear hierarchy with specific confrontational scenarios you may work through in progressive order, from the least to the most anxiety-inducing. When you feel comfortable with the tension in each, as well as internalize the feelings that you can do these things without any ill effects on yourself or the world, you can move to the next step. Keep in mind, this is just a sample. 1. Take a long time remembering the passcode for your credit card as you pay at the counter. 2. Have a sales clerk differentiate two similar product models for you, and take a long time hesitating over which to buy. 3. Decline an offer by a salesperson to try a product or upgrade a service. 4. Say no to a coworker asking you to cover for their shift. 5. Send food back in a restaurant. 6. At a dinner party, inform the host that a snack was too salty. 7. In a restaurant, drop cutlery on purpose several times and request a replacement every time. 8. Let a friend know that you need them to return a thing that they borrowed. State a specific date on which you want it returned. 9. Deliberately arrive late for a meeting. 10. Speak up when you disagree with a coworker's idea or plan. 11. Negotiate with an accounts representative to waive the late fees you were charged because of a system glitch. 12. Ask your raucous apartment neighbors to keep their noise down. 13. Dispute the results of a performance review your supervisor conducted on you. 14. Speak with a friend about their fault-finding patterns and ask them to stop being negative all the time. And 15. Tell your boss to stop humiliating you in front of people at work. Remember to tailor your fear hierarchy with respect to your personal anxieties and fears, which may vary from the above either in kind, in order, or in both. Construct your list specific to the confrontation scenarios with the most significance to you, or if you find the above list mirroring the conflict situations you'd like to try out, you may arrange them according to the intensity of fear they create in you. Also note that as genuine conflict situations are understandably not always possible to recreate in real life, you have the option of visualizing the scenarios instead. However, it is still best to actually experience such situations in real life whenever you can. How exposure therapy works. The working principle behind exposure therapy is that when you force yourself to stay in the conflict situation and fully experience the range of emotions you feel in that moment, be it discomfort, anger, anxiety, or fear, you'll come to find those difficult emotions easier and easier to tolerate and accept. You can only manage conflict successfully if you've reached a point where you're comfortable enough to stay with the difficult emotions it may elicit. And that can only happen when you stop evading it every time it crops up. In essence, you find that things are not as bad as you thought they were, and you survive just fine. This allows fear and anxieties to slowly die down through the realization that negative consequences won't follow. For instance, exposing yourself to the situations listed in the sample fear hierarchy above will have you experience the uncomfortable feelings and fearful thoughts that come with being immersed in conflict. Taking a long time to remember the passcode for your credit card as the line of customers waiting to pay lengthens will cause you to feel anxious, embarrassed, and tense. But as you continue to stay with those feelings and refuse to buckle under the pressure of moving along already, you soon discover that no matter how many pairs of eyes keep piercing at you, the world will not end, and you will not die by virtue of that. The most that can probably happen is that someone will tell you to